Hi, I'm Ella Shawn, reluctant romance writer and host of Enchanted Beast Podcast. Welcome to the Enchanted Forest. In today's episode, Ella asked the question, are you a servant of lust or a master of love? And now, here's your host. Enchanted Friday, my enchanted beast. How are you guys doing? It's that time again. It's time for Freaky Friday. It's time to let your freak flags fly. I swear I'm going to get better at saying that. Like, for real, I am going to get better at saying that. Anywho, it's been a week. I've said that probably every podcast that I've done this week. It has been a week. And I'm not a complainer because why complain, right? However, I am human. And let's just say that this week has tried every bit of my patience. But I'm here. It's Friday. And it's time to get freaky, right? So, are you a servant of lust or a master of love? When I thought about this topic, I really was thinking about marriages or monogamous committed relationships, where one partner was kind of, you know, low sex drive and another partner was high sex drive or average sex drive. And then I thought, no, I don't necessarily want to just focus on that. I really wanted to talk about this concept of lust and love. I wrote a blog about it for my website, Ella's Enchanted Life. And I wrote the blog from the perspective of a writer, of course, right? And how romance writers use lust. And then through a series of events, that lust becomes an indelible love, right? So I thought, is that how it happens? Is that how we fall deeply in love? Is it lust first and then love? And if it is, then why does lust get such a horrible rap? Why are people tripping about lusting after each other, lusting for someone, right? So that's how I kind of came to this topic of being a servant of lust or a master of love. My conclusion, well, it comes at the conclusion, right, of the podcast. So I thought, what are my questions about lust and love? I mean, are women able to tell the difference between lust and love? Do we understand what lust looks like, what it feels like, how it behaves, versus what love looks like, feels like, and behaves like, right? And then I wanted to know, is it that we assume love goes above and beyond and lust does just enough to close the deal? I mean, women want the fairy tale. Most women want the fairy tale. I mean, I grew up with Disney princess stories. My daughters grew up with Disney princess stories. Most of the world grew up with the idea of the fairy tale, finding Prince Charming. I mean, when Meghan Markle hitched herself to the yummy Prince Harry, we were giddy. I was giddy, first and foremost, because a Black woman is once again in the House of Tudor. Yay. Secondly, because Prince Harry is freaking hot. Yay. And thirdly, because she got the fairy tale, right? She got the prince, and now she's a princess. Holy cow. Who doesn't want the fairy tale, the romance, the looks that Harry gave her at their wedding? Who doesn't want that, right? But was that lust? Or did we associate that look with love? Now, I'm going to be honest with you. When I went back and looked at it, because of course I looked at the wedding, but when I went back and I looked at, you know, the looks, because, you know, they had the clips of all the looks he gave her. Those looks were very lusty. They were very hot. I mean, I actually went so far as to like pause it so that I could write the descriptions down, because that's the look I want my romantic hero to give his conquest, right? Those looks were very lusty. But everybody says, guys, he looks at her so lovingly. He looked at her like he wanted to tear her dress off and start the honeymoon in the chapel. That's what it looked like to me. But what do I know? I write erotica, right? So I said, I want to know if I know what lust looks like. What's the difference between lust and love? So to me, right, lust makes me think of hot, sweaty, groping, teeth clashing, tongue sucking, lip biting, pulling, thrusting. We couldn't stop if we wanted to. Good thing we don't have to. That's what lust, that's lust to me. It's like all out animalistic. It has to happen now or the world will end. Sexual tension, right? Love makes me think of Sunday mornings, rolling over, patting on the shoulders, rubbing cold feet on warm legs, sliding cold hands over warm skin, flipping soft thighs over hard length, kissing shoulders, neck, pulling away, and coming together. I hope no one knocks on this door before we're done. Me too. But we still won't stop, right? So that's love. And the only difference I'm able to see, honestly, is there's an intimacy and a familiarity with love versus the all out, I don't even know your name completely, and I have no idea if I'm going to see you after I'm done, but this has to happen right now. It's an urgency with lust that's not there with love. That's the difference. So there's intimacy in love, and it's familiar, right? With lust, there's an urgency. I don't know you, but I'm hoping this is going to be as great as I think it's going to be, because even if it's not, it's still happening because holy, I need it, right? It's an urgency there. And that's how I see the difference between lust and love. So of course, you know, me, research chick, I go online and I'm looking and I pull up several articles. I'm not lying to you. I pulled up like maybe 5 articles and they all were the same article written by the same woman on lust and love. Her name is Dr. Judith Olof. She's a medical doctor. And she has all this stuff on lust and love and you know, knowing the difference and how to bring the two together. So I was like, okay, this chick must be, you know, legit, because the 5 articles from 5 different online periodicals all had her stuff in it. So I wanted to know what other people thought lust looked like. So Dr. Judith Orloff says that lust is a physical attraction focused, right? You are completely focused on how good the person looks, right? How his jeans fit him just right. How that t-shirt is stretched across his chest and his arms. How sexy his lips are. How his eyes make you think of some other stuff, right? How big his hands are. You are consumed with what he looks like. And that's all. Interest in having sex, but not talking. Listen, I don't need conversation. I don't need to know your name. I don't want your sign. I don't need to know if you have, you know, anything going on. Just make sure you have some condoms because it's just sex that I want. Nothing else. Okay? Keep relationship at the fantasy level. You know that level, right? Where we all sit down and we fantasize about having crazy monkey sex and then that's it. We don't want to go beyond that. We don't want to go into the wake up in the morning and look at each other and go have breakfast and talk about your plans for the day. No. Just keep it at crazy monkey sex. That's it. That's all I want. Lust. Once sex is over, it's time to go. There's no lingering. There's no, hey, let's cuddle. Hey, let's, you know, talk about what happened between us to make sure everything's okay with everybody. Nope. All right. Hey, that was great. Bye. That was amazing. See you later. Right? It's that famous walk of shame. I've never had a walk of shame. And I've often wanted one. So I think I'm going to have to orchestrate something like that with my husband, the walk of shame. That might be another one of those fantasies that I have to orchestrate. Last but not least, your lovers, but not friends. I absolutely love the irony. We're lovers, but we're not friends. Where does love fit in there? I think it should be something different, right? I think that we should call a spade, right? We're bang buddies. Fuck buddies. We're not even buddies. We're not friends. We just had sex and that was it. So lovers, no, I don't like that terminology for that because lovers implies that there's love between you. There's no love between you. There's just lust. So maybe they're lusters. We're lusters. I like that. Hey, goodbye, Lester. I'll see you later. Thanks. It was great. She goes on to say that the signs of love are you are actively spending time together, not having sex. So sex is not the main focus here. Conversation is stimulating. It's as stimulating for you as sex is. You listen without judgment. You empathize with your partner. Their happiness is as important to you as your happiness is to you. You want to be a part of their life completely. You want to know their family, their friends. You want to hang out with their work friends, right? You want completely in. And you want them completely in. So love is a lot more in depth and it's a lot more entrenched and intertwined. And there's a lot more talking and communicating going on within the love relationship versus the lust relationship. But at the end of it, are the differences mutually exclusive? Or does one lead to the other? So I thought, what happens physically when a person experiences lust? According to Psychology Today, lust is an altered state of consciousness, programmed by the primary urge to procreate. So lust is not some foreign thing that happens outside of our body, but then it's like affecting the body. It's not some outside stimuli that gets us to a heightened state of arousal. No, lust is a physiological change in the chemical makeup of the brain that causes us to have a heightened state of arousal and an overwhelming need to have sex. It's that limbic brain, right? It's our primal need. It is our beast. Lust comes from our beast. That part of us that knows without knowing, that part that seeks and finds and enjoys what it wants, right? It's the part of us that's still connected to the divine, to the universe, and it knows what its purpose is, right? That's our beast. It knows exactly why it's here. And one of the reasons it's here is to procreate, to make more of itself. So lust, scientifically, takes place in the limbic brain, right? The brain that provides us with the fight or flight, tells us, you know, we need to stop moving because something's coming. It tells us we need to eat or we'll die. It tells us that we need to have sex or we won't be here anymore. It's the part of our brain that says, hey, you should probably be afraid of that. And that's the only thing it does, right? That's it. That's the only thing the limbic brain does. It's very intuitive. But if we're taking this out of that context of psychological and neurological functions, and I want to put it in the function of our beast, the beast that sets our wild woman free, then yes, she knows that lust is a wonderful, amazing high. That's what it is. I mean, research has shown, again, according to Psychology Today, that lust affects the brain in the same way as snorting coke. Oh my God. Okay, let me stop here. I've never done like illegal street drugs before. I haven't even smoked weed before. And yes, smoking weed is on my bucket list. Don't ask me why. I just think it's something I need to do, right? But I've never, you know, snorted coke, smoked crack, had heroin, popped pills. I've never done any of it. But I watch a lot of documentaries, and are you kidding me? Being in a lustful state gives you the same high as snorting coke? Why are you people out here paying all this money for cocaine when you can just walk around and be lustful? I'm confused. Anyway, I don't know. If you're into cocaine and you happen to be listening to this podcast, stop snorting coke and just allow your beast to roam. Let that lust fill your brain. And you'll be just as high. You'll feel just as good. You'll see the world through rosy-colored glasses the same way you do when you're on coke. In fact, lust allows the brain to see people as the brain wants them to be, as the brain needs them to be. So if you need this person to be 6'9", 235 pounds with 10% body fat, your brain, when you're in a lust-induced state, will say, yep, that's what it is. Now, you might come out of that lustful state after everything is said and done and realize he's, you know, 5'4", 690 pounds, bald, and small. But hey, cocaine, lust, lets you see the world the way you want to see it, right? I'm just saying. Serious case of beer goggles, right? Serious case of beer goggles. Jesus, I didn't know. That's why I'm sitting here like, woohoo. Okay. It also makes it very difficult to stay centered, though. And it makes it very difficult for you to hear your intuitive self. So if you're in a lustful state, you might ignore that voice that says, danger, this guy is a serial rapist. Danger, this guy is a sadist, right? And I'm not a masochist. But you won't hear that because lust alters your brain the same way that cocaine does. So in a way, that's kind of scary as hell. Okay, I just scared myself. I just scared myself because, oh my gosh, that's very scary. Okay, so we get lust. We understand what lust is and how it functions. The brain, of course, alters the chemistry. Love alters the chemistry as well. And we'll get to that. But it's not making you coked out at all. Okay? So my original question was, is it lust and then love? Because that's how romance writers write. We write with lust first. Every great, you know, romance novel, that amazing instant chemistry that shoots electricity up the arms of your two protagonists, it's lust. It's sheer, unadulterated, oh my God, if I'm not inside this woman right now, oh my God, if I can't have him right now, everything else is going to cease to exist. We start every great relationship in our romance novels with lust, instantaneous lust. And then somehow, magically, that lust becomes an enduring, deep, you know, irrevocable love. And I'm like, is that how it really happens? So I went and did some more research. And yeah, it, you know, it kind of looks like the stages of falling in love. It has to start with lust. Right? The beast has to, in some way, shape, or form, connect with the lizard brain, the male reptilian brain. It has to. It has to be something primal there that your beast is going to hold on to, right? So it's a physical need. It's physical. You want pleasure. You want release, right? It's like a sport. That's how lust works with your sex drive, right? If you're in a lustful stage, then you really just want the pleasure. You need the physicality of it. You need to be touched. You need to be groped. You need to be pounded, right? But then what if you kind of sleep over unexpectedly and you wake up? You're not in a lust-induced haze. You don't have cocaine brain, right? Your beer goggles are all nice and clean, and you really, really find that you're attracted to this person, right? Not just, you know, for the fact that he was a good lay. No, you find that you really, really are attracted to this person, to the way they look, to the way they sound, even, right? To the way they seem slightly vulnerable while they're sleeping, right? And then you kind of start having this, I can't stop thinking about this guy feeling. I wonder what he's doing right now. He said he was going to call me. I wonder if he's going to give me that call. He was really cute. And he had this thing that he did, right? You're in that phase. And then he calls and you guys go out and it's like, oh my God, he's so funny. And it's one more thing that you like about him, right? And then sex becomes a way to build knowledge of each other. It becomes a way of connecting with each other and knowing each other. It becomes a way to show affection for each other, right? And it becomes a way to always and foremost have pleasurable moments together. Yes? And so that's the attraction phase. And that's great, right? That's a, I love him so much, I can't even see straight phase. And then after some time, that's where the love comes in, right? That's where the attachment and the deep, deep love comes in. Because now you've spent enough time with him and you know, you can say, oh my gosh, he's great, except he snores so loudly. Or he's an ass when it comes down to sports. Like he acts like he knows everything there is to know about it and that my opinion doesn't matter, right? And so now you've spent enough time with him that you've seen flaws and all. And guess what? You still let him come over. You still let him do some things to you that you wouldn't let anybody else do. Yes, I'm talking about that. And it's all good because you love him, right? And your sex becomes more intimate. It becomes a function of deepening the intimacy, of accepting every aspect of each other. It becomes a bonding tool, right? The more sex you have, the more bonded you are. And that's all biology. That's the release of oxytocin. And that oxytocin is a bonding chemical. It says, hey, you just made me come. Thanks. I'm going to stick with you forever. Let's do that again. And the oxytocin is released. And it says, hey, you just gave me another amazing orgasm. Oh my God. You're the guy I'm going to marry. Okay? And that's another function of sex in a love relationship. Of course, it's all about the pleasure. And there's more pleasure in a deep love relationship because there's more intimacy and there's more bonding and there's more acceptance, right? It is also a way for each of you to show possession. Because I don't care what anyone says, nobody wants to be in a love relationship where the other person isn't possessive of them, isn't like proprietary of them. This is my husband, and I will cut you if you try to encroach on my man. Those are words that I've spoken several times in my life, and I mean them. Like, I'm not even playing. And I'm a nice person, but don't. This is my husband. I will cut you. I need that ownership, right? And so for me and for others, you know, who are deeply in love, that whole sexual activity, the sexual connection is a way for me to, you know, exert my possessiveness over him and vice versa. And of course, it is an extremely effective way to communicate because here's what I find. Men have issues talking, but if you pay attention, they will tell you everything you need to know through how they have sex with you. They can communicate days and days of conversation in 2 to 3 thrusts, right? In just a touch, a kiss, a lick, a nip. Let me stop. It's a way to communicate, okay? And so what happens when you have gone through the stages of falling in love, you lust it, it's great. Then you woke up and it's like, hey, he's still cute. Attraction, it got a little bit deeper. It got real deep. Now you're deep in love. And hey, this is the man I'm going to marry because what he give me? Oxytocin releasing orgasms, right? Now you're married. You're deep in love. But Ella, I miss the lust. I want that back. I want I want the lust back. Lustful behavior and in love relationships and marriages is mandatory for a happy and strong marriage. A, because of the oxytocin, right? B, because shoot, it's a free way to entertain each other. I don't understand how married couples can ever be bored with each other. Hey, I'm bored. Let's look at something on TV. Okay. There's nothing on. There's nothing good to watch. Oh, okay. Hey, you want to have sex? Yeah. How can you ever be bored when there's sex? And it's free. And it's in-house. I remember thinking back when I was in college and my boyfriend and I, who is now my husband. So my husband and I who were dating back in college, I remember we would talk with each other when we had money to pay our phone bills. And or we would write these really long letters. But all of this, it was always like, gosh, I can't wait until we grow up and we're actually like living together because it's like in-house booty and we don't have to wait because, you know, he was in another state. I was in another state. We only could come home every now and again. And it was like marathon weekends. And so it's just like, oh, I can't wait until we're in-house. And then, of course, got married, got in-house, got busy, got all this other stuff. And then where's the lust? I want the lust back because it does tend to wane, right? So another reason to maintain that lustful phase of your relationship is it enhances the partnership. It keeps us monogamous, right? I'm not shopping for milk when I have an entire cow, right? So, and of course it strengthens the love. So I thought, because I think every marriage is going to go through this period of a sexless time. Like every marriage is going to go through this period where sex is not the focus anymore. And so what causes that? What causes the first phase of falling in love to just drop out of the equation so that all you're left with is attraction and love, but not that fiery, I need to tear your clothes off and get at you lust. No private time. When you're married and then you bring children into it, you're like always surrounded by people, right? And you're always out doing stuff. So you really don't have a lot of private time. And then on top of that, you really don't have privacy. When you're married and you have children, your room is the same as the family room. Your bedroom is the same as the family room. And I can attest to this. We have tried to say, no, this room is off limits to anybody except Ella and her man. It doesn't work that way. We still wake up and kids are, you know, knocking on the door and, hey, can I come in? And at night, you know, hey, can I just sit here and talk with you for a minute? Because this is the hub, right? And I don't know why, but it just is. And I do have friends who are like, no, our bedroom is completely off limits to the kids. They can't knock on the door. They can't step over the threshold. They don't have any business being in our bedroom. I mean, and I guess if I and my husband had started that when our kids were young, then we would have a private space, but we don't. And so, yeah, very little privacy, no motivation. Now, here's the thing. There are times when you just don't feel like it. You don't feel like it, or maybe he doesn't feel like it, right? And you're not motivated. Maybe he's overcritical. Maybe he's always criticizing you. Maybe he's never giving you any, you know, kudos. Girl, you looking good today. Maybe he's never appreciating you or vice versa. Maybe you're the critical one. And whatever he does is never good enough. I wouldn't want to sleep with you either, right? I mean, there has to be some appreciation for non-sexual activity in order for the sexual activity to happen and then mean something, right? Maybe there's a low sex drive. That happens. Hormones are always changing, especially with us women folk. I mean, Jesus, depending on where we are in our monthly cycle, we're just not going to feel like doing it. And then maybe he has a low sex drive. Maybe his testosterone levels aren't where they need to be. A hostile environment. If you guys are bickering and arguing 24/7, obviously sex is just not going to happen. Because who wants to have angry sex? Well, I don't know, because angry sex seems like great sex, but not like all the time. That's what I'm going to say. If there was a traumatic sexual experience in childhood for either partners, that's going to be huge. And sometimes that traumatic sexual event, like that traumatic sexual experience, it might be hidden. Perhaps the partner who was affected with it or by it didn't even realize it was something that was an issue until it becomes an issue, right? And so it has to be something that both of you are comfortable and willing to talk about and discuss. Because if I don't know that this thing that happened in my childhood happened, and I don't know how it's affecting me until it does, then that's going to definitely affect my sexual relationship with my partner, and vice versa. So, I mean, age and familiarity, and the older you get, the lower your sex drive goes. At least that's what they say. But oh my God, I'm like, the older I get, the more I want it. I don't know. Maybe that's for guys. I don't know. Familiarity. We do the same thing all the time. It's boring. I know you. I've been with you for 1,000 years. That's where your fantasies and role playing and add a little kink come in. You got to be willing to try new things. Arousal. Diminishing with age. Okay, I said that. Maybe there's a lack of confidence. Maybe if I'm feeling a little off and I'm just like, I'm not initiating sex anymore, I'm not responding favorable to his initiation, then maybe his confidence has dropped because he thinks she must not want me. So he's not going to initiate it. And then I'm like, well, he stopped initiating it. So maybe he doesn't want me anymore. So I don't feel comfortable initiating it. That's where communication becomes super duper important, right? Biological and psychological developments can definitely affect your sex drive, right? It can affect it. Biological, here's the thing. I'm not shy about the fact that I have lupus and fibromyalgia, narcolepsy with cataplexy, small nerve neuropathy. I have a whole host of crazy going on here. You know, my body is a wonderland. And when I was first diagnosed with lupus, it's a chronic illness. And any chronic illness, fibromyalgia, RA, you know, lupus, chronic pain, whatever it is, if it's chronic and ongoing and it causes a lot of discomfort in the body, listen, when I was first diagnosed with lupus and I was really, you know, bad with it, it was horrible. I couldn't stand to be touched because I hurt so badly. My entire body hurt. My skin hurt. I mean, my hair hurt. I couldn't stand to be touched. And there was no way in hell sex was going to happen between my husband and I in those early years of lupus. It didn't mess with my sex drive though, because I still wanted to. And well, I found a way, but it was painful. There was a lot of pain. And sex is so physical. I mean, really, if you want a great workout, right? It works everything. And so because of the physicality of it, like my husband and I had to relearn how my body could be moved so that I wouldn't experience crazy, crazy levels of pain and discomfort. And that's like not just my muscles and my joints, but like internally, when you have chronic illnesses that cause inflammation, everything changes in the body, right? There's an autoimmune disease called Sjogren's. And basically it dries out everything that's supposed to stay moist. Your nose, your eyes, your mouth, your vagina, your skin, everything that's supposed to stay moist, Sjogren's dries it out. Well, guess what? Most lupus patients develop Sjogren's, right? We develop Sjogren's. I have Sjogren's. And yes, for a while, I was like, nothing. Like, there is absolutely nothing working for this dryness. And it was like a desert for a while. And it was just, you know, it didn't matter. We had all sorts of lubricants. And I mean, I even got some lube from one of my friends who sells Pure Romance. And even that was like, and it's really good stuff. And it didn't necessarily, it didn't do anything. Because when your body is, you know, on the attack, sex can become very difficult. And I think in those cases, it really is about being patient and learning to communicate and find different ways to engage in sexual activity, right? And then like some medications can cause your libido to drop. Birth control will cause your libido to drop. So I don't even know if it's the birth control, like it stops you from ovulating. I don't know if that's the magic of birth control and keeping people from getting pregnant, or if the magic of birth control is, ha, you no longer are going to want to have sex anyway. So bada bing, bada boom, no pregnancy there. I don't know, but it does jack up your libido. Depression, drugs you take to manage your depression, all of that stuff plays into your sex drive and how much you want to engage, right? So Ella, what to do? What are we supposed to do? Right? Because I'm still deeply in love with my man and I am still crazy attracted to him, but the lust, I need it back. Well, the first thing is communication. And here's the difficult part. It is so hard to sit down and talk with your man. And women will talk about this stuff because we will. It's so hard for your man to sit down with you and know that whatever he's doing or not doing is causing dissatisfaction in a sexual way. That's like, you know what? Just castrate me. Just take my balls and make them earrings, because if I can't satisfy you, you know, what am I good for, right? So it's hard for a man to sit down and talk about his shortcomings, no pun intended, maybe I did intend that pun, in the sex department, right? So let's give them some options. Let's think outside of the box. Let's allow creativity to help us, help them, help us, right? So you can always text. You can always send short text messages. I was just thinking about you. I miss you so much. Have a great day, right? And then he can respond, because in that way, you're faceless. He's comfortable. It's just a few words, but he can say, I miss you too. And that lets you know, babe, I hear you. I do miss us. I do miss us like you miss us, right? My husband and I did this, and I still have the journal. We did a co-journal where I would write in the journal about what was happening, you know, with me and how I was processing what was going on, you know, within our relationship, because things were changing so rapidly. And then, you know, he could read it if he wanted to, but he didn't have to, because his thing was just to write in the journal. And if he read it and he wanted to respond to something I said, great. But if you read it and he didn't want to respond, great. And vice versa. But that was so freeing, because just knowing that whatever I wrote, he had access to it. He had 100% access to my feelings, to my fears, to my anger, to my frustration, to my love, to everything. And it was so freeing for him because he could write it. He didn't have to sit and tell me about it, looking at my face, knowing I can't keep my emotions off my face. So if he's telling me something that's pissing me off and I'm supposed to be listening without judgment, but my face looks like, okay, whatever, I don't even want to hear the rest of this BS, right? Then that's difficult. But if he's just writing, then he knows I'm right there. I can read it and we can move on. So I like the co-journaling and daily post-it notes. I like those, the daily post-it love notes, because think about it. A post-it isn't that big. I'm not talking about the ginormous ones you can pin on the wall. Your regular, normal little post-it, right? It's not that big. So it's not like you could say 51 things on the post-it note, but just think how cute it would be. A cute little post-it love note. You know, I used to put them in my children's lunch boxes when I would fix their lunches. And it'd say something like, "You're an amazing girl and you are a superstar. Love, Mom." Something very simple. Well, why not say, "Hey, you want to play love post-it notes with me for a week? Hey, you want to write sexy post-it notes for a week?" Right? Hey, you want to write dirty post-it notes for a week? Because a post-it note isn't that big. So you could definitely get a bunch of bang for your buck, so to speak. Right? Oh, I like this idea. It came to me when I was like thinking about my husband and I back in college. We would record ourselves talking. I think we had like the first podcast. We would record ourselves just kind of talking to each other. Like I would talk in the recording like I was talking to him. And it was so dirty. We still have the tapes. I don't think we have a way of listening to them, but I'm going to find a way because it was really good. So it made me think of this, but send a song a day. You know how you can go on Amazon Music, right? And if you are listening to a song and you like it, you can share it to social media or send it as a text. Why not go find the song that says exactly what you want to say to your man and send it to him and say, please respond with a song. He listens to the song, it says what it says, and then he sends you back a song and you get it. That's a nice, easy way to communicate without having the pressure of sitting face to face and pouring it all out there, right? And then when it's time, because eventually you guys are going to have to sit down and talk, right? When it's time, you want to talk in a safe space. Tactical talking. That's what it's called. Safe, sane, consensual. Every Freaky Friday. That's what it's all about, right? In a safe, sane, and consensual space. That means you have rules. You set rules in place. Standard rules. You speak without judgment. You don't make condescending remarks. There is no blame. You listen, restate, and then respond. So what I hear you saying is, I should listen, restate what I hear, and then give my response. I think that's a really good idea. I like the way that would play out in conversation. I just did the whole thing, right? I just gave you an example of the listen, restate, respond. I statements only. That's the worst thing in the world to do when you're trying to have a conversation with someone and say you, I want you to, because you're not them. You can't speak for them and you don't know what's best for them. When I was an English teacher, my students would write and they'd always use second person. You can blah, 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 blah. And every time they do that, I just circle the first you and I put a giant red F on the paper. And then they come up to me angry. I can't believe you gave me an F. What's this for? You didn't even go through the rest of my paper. And I just have them standing there and I'd say, yeah, get your index finger and tap your nose. And then keep tapping it while you're telling me why you're so upset. And they would keep tapping their nose. And then they would get so frustrated with the tapping that they couldn't tell me what their problem was. And then they'd say, can I please stop tapping my nose? And I'd say, well, that's what it feels like to me when I'm reading a paper that says you, because you assumes that you know what's best for me, the reader. And they're like, oh, so that's why I like I statements in conversation, not second person. I can only speak for me, right? And you can only speak for you. And always express appreciation. That's super duper important. Two, please decide that sex is important. That's the first thing. Please decide. Once you've talked about some stuff, then it becomes a conscious decision. Sex is important. That no holds barred, we're not going to make it to the bed, sex is important. I think the shower's going to have to make it happen, sex is important, right? I cannot believe you bit me there. How am I going to cover this mark up, sex? That's important. Decide that it's important. There's a 90-10 rule, right? Or a 10-90. 90-10 is this. You guys are in a great relationship. The sex is amazing. It's hot. It's passionate. It's all over the place. Then sex is like 10% of the focus in the relationship. It's like, you know, you're not sitting there dwelling on it. It's like 10%, right? 10% of what you're actually like actively focusing on, right? But then let's flip that. We have a 10-90 rule. Decent relationship, but y'all not having any sex. None. And when you do, it's not satisfying. It kind of sucks. Then sex becomes 90% of the focus in the relationship. And the relationship is only like 10% of the focus because 90% of your focus is on why your sex life sucks and what you can do to make it better. And if I can't make it better, where am I going to go to get better, right? So what can you do? These are suggestions, and this is like a compiled list and then some of my own. Obviously, people always say, well, you can always schedule sex. I personally am not a sex scheduler. I don't like it. And for me, I don't like it. But I'm not a scheduled person either. Institute mental foreplay, watch porn together, shop for sex toys, or just look at a site together and make comments about what you see. Cook meals together. That's some sexy stuff. That's foreplay in and of itself. Cooking with your husband. Oh God, it's really cool because you're always bumping into each other and you start playing. Cooking together is great. Shower together. Make that a priority. That whole showering together with or without sex is really important. Touch each other as often as possible, skin to skin. Give each other kisses with and without tongue as often as possible. Hug it out. Hugs are amazing. I don't know why people don't hug more. I don't know why couples don't hug more. There is something so comforting about a hug. When my husband comes home and he gives me a big hug, I mean, I feel safe and I feel secure and I feel cherished and I feel cared for. And it's just nothing like a hug. So hug each other more, right? Cuddle and watch TV. Not, you know, for the purpose of having sex. No, cuddle and watch TV. Just get on the sofa and cuddle it up. Look at some TV because it creates intimacy, right? Take a walk in your neighborhood and hold hands. When you're driving, hold hands. Hold hands as much as possible, because what you're doing is skin on skin connecting. Maybe, you know, if y'all been together 1,000 years, maybe you need to go jazz up your wardrobe and tell him to do the same. Baby, I'm tired of seeing you in these khakis. Why don't you go get some Levi's? Why don't you get some different shoes, and I'll get some different shoes, and we'll see what we like. I'll buy you an outfit I want to see you in. You go buy me an outfit that you want to see me in. You see how that works? I don't know. Shoot. Shave. Shave the vajayjay. If it's not something that you're doing, maybe you should do it just one time. Shave it down. See what happens. I don't know. I mean, at this point, if sex is 90% of my focus in my relationship, I'm trying any and everything. You said you wanted me to dye my pubic hair blonde? Okay. Shoot. We could do that. I'm kidding. I wouldn't do that. But I'm serious. Just, you have to be willing to try. And then, I mean, honestly, especially if there's sexual trauma involved, if there are health issues that have become an impetus to sex, if there are underlying relationship problems that have caused your relationship to become sexless, then definitely you want to seek professional help. Sex therapy is more than viable option, right? Let's see. I think I'm done. And here's my conclusion. Am I a servant of lust or a master of love? Here's what I think. I am not able to master love unless I worship lust. There can be absolutely no love without lust. Lust is the beginning of love. And when love happens, lust has to stay there. It has to run over and through and around on top of that love. So are you a servant or a master? Strive to be both, right? Until next time, it's been Freaky Friday, baby. And I will be back on Monday with Monday Motivation, and we're moving to the heart chakra. So be sure to tune in, have an enchanted weekend, and thank you for joining me in the Enchanted Forest. Bye.
This has been Ella Shawn with Enchanted Beast Podcast. Thank you for joining. And remember to stay enchanted.